You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, October 24th, 2016.
Even if all the other councils were to agree that X amount should be slated for public safety, it wouldn't make any difference if the city council felt differently.
County council member Cheryl Munson says the public should keep an eye on elected officials and how they spend public safety tax dollars. We'll have more discussion on the tax later in the show in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we'll hear from the Bloomington Community Band. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson continues to face criticism for suggesting widespread voter fraud has taken place in Indiana. Lawson walked back some of her comments in recent days. This morning, the Political Action Committee Patriot Majority USA issued a statement accusing Lawson of causing a, quote, statewide panic and helping support unfounded beliefs that the election is rigged. Lawson's office and the state police both issued a string of public statements last week about what they referred to as voter fraud. In one statement, Lawson said fraud might be the cause of thousands of recent changes made to voter registration information across the state, but she acknowledged on Thursday the changes may simply be the result of legitimate changes made by voters in advance of contentious election. The state police have said they are investigating that case. The police also say they continue to review evidence seized during an October 4th raid of the Indiana Voter Registration Project, which is run by Patriot Majority USA. That organization was working to register black voters in Indiana. Police say they are reviewing materials for evidence that the organization committed voter fraud. But a Huffington Post story over the weekend revealed the Voter Registration Project may only be guilty of ignoring a technicality in election law requiring certain paperwork to be filed with county clerk's offices. The Huffington Post also reports that the state police may not have legal jurisdiction to investigate the errors, which would typically be reviewed by county election boards. In a statement this morning, Patriot Majority USA claimed that Governor Pence is using the voter fraud investigations to, quote, trash the electoral system of his state and to advance a demagogic narrative that the U.S. voting system is rigged, unquote.
Members of the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission continue to work through details of a contract with Richland Bean Blossom Community School Corporation for STEM programming. STEM is the acronym for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. Last December, the commission approved giving the RBB School Corporation $250,000 in TIF funds for the first year of a new STEM program. In the commission's October 19th meeting, County Attorney Jeff Cockrell said state statute allows tax increment financing district funds, or TIF funds, to be used for educational programs.
It allows redevelopment to fund organizations whose primary function include the provision of educational programs designed to prepare individuals to perform in the competitive global economy, to give them funding up to 15% of their annual revenues, and you can't use bond proceeds for it. Mm-hmm.
RBB School Corporation is contributing approximately $480,000 per year of its own money. That's to create the program over 6 years. In reviewing the commission's arrangement with RBB Schools, Cockerell said the money will go toward infrastructure, such as adding Wi-Fi capabilities and teacher certification and training. The commission favored requiring biannual updates from RBB Superintendent Mike Wilcox. Commissioner members, including Jim Shelton, agreed on the need for a measurement of the program's progress.
I'd like suggestions from them as to what they can really measure. I know this thing is going to kind of be phased in, so that's certainly a schedule that we could measure against, because they aren't going to start all the grades at once, right? They're going to start the lowers and work on up.
Commission Chair Barry Lessow said it may be difficult to get metrics that show how effective the commission's investment is.
We can pretty much tell if we ask Lisa to put a road in and the road's in, it's pretty easy to see. And if the road lasts a few years, it's pretty easy to see. This is a lot harder to see. And if we don't know what we're looking for and we don't know exactly what it is that's going to be the greatest benefit, then it's hard to measure.
Commission member Efrit Pfefferman suggested a longitudinal study could be one tool for measuring the program's success.
The natural tie-in for the community that's being educated and then the employer community in that area. If that's one of the objectives, is that students graduating from Edgewood have the potential, greater potential to fill those jobs in Innovation West. Is that something that's being surveyed right now, the composition of that workforce? And if not, might we consider soliciting professional services to do a longitudinal study where once a year you survey that workforce? And if we see that in 10 years, Edgewood students are rising up and filling those types of positions.
Commission members were supportive of Pfefferman's idea. Cockrell said he hoped to have the contract completed in December.
The Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department has announced they will begin their annual winterization preparation at more than 30 sites by gradually shutting down their water supplies in the coming weeks. Parks and Recreation Operations Coordinator Barb Dunar says the shutdowns will begin October 10th. And continue through the month on a schedule that leaves the most heavily used parks until last. She says the water must be shut off before the first hard freeze to prevent costly damage to pipes and infrastructure. More information about the shutoff schedule can be obtained at 812-349-3498. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. The recently readopted public safety tax has been a source of both concern and confusion for both elected officials and the public. Reporter Sarah Vaughn talks with local officials to understand how changes in the state's tax code both tangled passage of the tax and opened the door for revenue to be used in more ways than one.
It's been well publicized that the public safety tax, originally passed this June, had to be readopted earlier this month by the Monroe County Income Tax Council. But some elected officials, as well as the public, are still asking questions, not only about the way the tax was handled, but what it will be used for in the future. Kevin Ferris and Brian Mobley of the Ellettsville Town Council expressed their frustration in the town council's October 10th meeting. How did it get so confusing? Philippa Guthrie, corporate counsel for the City of Bloomington, said it stems from a legislative rewrite of the state's tax code.
Within that previous statute, there was a provision that allowed you to pass a LOIT specifically for public safety. And that's the provision we were using. That didn't expire technically until July 1st of 2016, and there was a provision in that previous statute that said it was in the new statute, I think. What it said was you may continue to pass these kinds of taxes, local income taxes, under the previous statute until June 30th of 2016. Well, we passed ours after May 1st, but before July 1st.
Michael Duffy, General Counsel for the Indiana Department of Local Government Finance, or DLGF, says there was an additional provision in the law.
The statutes say that any rates in effect as of May 1st of this year would be transitioned into the new framework, the local income tax framework. And in this case, their public safety rate was not adopted until June, and so it was not in effect as of May 1st of this year. So there was no hook. There was nothing that transition it into the new framework under the local income tax statutes.
the state legislature simplified the tax code by combining three taxes that counties already had authority to levy: the county option income tax, the county adjusted gross income tax, and county economic development income tax. These three taxes combined now make up what's simply called the local income tax, also known by the acronym the LIT. County Council Chair Cheryl Munson gives a simpler explanation.
It reset a whole bunch of local option income taxes to be put together into one pot. So for economic development and public safety, that was set up by the legislature to be combined in that fashion. So instead of having multiple buckets to put local option income taxes into, it essentially goes into one big bucket. And then you have, well, actually it's two. You have economic development and public safety combined in one bucket, and then you have the other needs that local income taxes are usually used for, that including operation of local government. And it was an actual surprise to us.
Duffy of the DLGF explains further.
Well, the unit decides, there's an overall expenditure rate, and then the unit can decide how to break up that rate for the different statutory purposes or uses. So by statute, there is a maximum or cap expenditure rate, and then, again, the units can decide how much of that goes for the certified chairs or economic development or public safety as examples.
If the county wanted to continue collecting the tax beyond December 31st, they had to readopt and do it before October 1st. Munson said the conversation about a public safety tax originally began with the need for more funding for the county's emergency 911 dispatch. But according to County Council member Marty Hawk, it quickly moved on from there.
I absolutely agree that there is more to public safety than central dispatch. I mean, after all, you want somebody to answer the call when you call for help, but you want that help to be available to show up. That means we need more road deputies. That means we need to have all the things that it takes to make public safety possible, which is the fire departments and so forth, law enforcement. So that's when there was a big push. We have to do more than just central dispatch.
Munson and Hawk both say they didn't realize until a meeting with the State Board of Accounts this summer that the changes in the law opened the door for the money to be used for more than public safety initiatives. The tax code provides specific examples of what qualifies as public safety and economic development. According to state statute, economic development projects can include paying off lease rentals, paying off bonds, and can be used for regional or local venture capital funds, to give just a few examples. I asked County Council Chair Cheryl Munson to give an example of economic development projects in Monroe County that officials might be tempted to use public safety tax money for.
Always in the county, and I'm going to speak just for the county, we have a great need for road funding. And here's a really good example. I-69 Section 5 has made connectivity from rural areas into Bloomington very difficult. I'll name one road, and that is Sample Road. There were plans to redo this road and provide connection onto I-69, but the funding for this has been dropped by MDOT, and I'm hoping that we can get it back. But if we can't get it back, there's going to be a crying need for additional funding from the county for road construction. So I would say that that roads would be something that people should pay attention to.
Munson points out that going forward, the Monroe County Income Tax Council will control how the public safety tax proceeds are used. The Income Tax Council is made up of the Bloomington City Council, the Monroe County Council, the Town of Ellettsville, and the Town of Steinsville, which is a non-voting member. The number of votes each member body carries is based on population. The city of Bloomington carries 59 of the council's 100 votes, the county gets 36 votes, and the town of Ellettsville carries 5 votes, which means, Munson says, that the city of Bloomington has the power to override the wishes of the other member bodies.
Even if all the other councils were to agree that X amount should be slated for public safety, it wouldn't make any difference if the city council felt differently.
In the September 27th meeting of the Monroe County Income Tax Council, Munson charged the public with keeping an eye on officials to see how those public safety dollars are spent. How do they do that?
That's pretty darn easy. We have all of our county council meetings are on CAT, and we also welcome the public to attend the meeting. The county council also has a very prompt record of its meetings in our minutes. And you can also talk to your county council representative. There are always presentations at the commissioners' meetings for road projects, and questions can be asked then about funding. The public can talk to the county council to express what they think should be funded.
Other public officials like Scott Oldham, president of the Ellettsville Town Council, and attorney Philippa Guthrie call for the public to have faith in their elected officials. Guthrie says she's not alarmed by the possibilities that tax money originally intended for public safety might one day be diverted to other uses.
I'm not alarmed. I mean, I trust our public officials. Nobody has discussed that I've heard so far anything about economic development, not that it wouldn't come up in the future, but it gave both the county and the city a really great option for helping to fund significant public safety needs. I mean, I know both the county and we certainly have a backlog of things like fire trucks. A lot of what we're going to get out of this next year is going directly to new fire trucks. You know, we have two ladder trucks that aren't fully functional. I would look at the economic development in the same way. It's just some more financing options for arranging what you fund from where so that you get the most bang for your buck.
As always, it's up to the public to decide how much scrutiny they'll give to how their tax money is being spent. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
Community Access Television Services posts videos of city and county meetings for public viewing on catstv.net.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security services for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information is available at 812-332-2168 or online at inscap.org.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
Hi, I'm Gary Wiggins, and I'm a volunteer with the Bloomington Community Band.
What is the mission or purpose of the community band?
Well, the main mission is to continue the American Songbook for the type of community concert band that we have, providing 15 or so concerts a year around the area to let people hear marches, concert music, show tunes, things of that nature.
And what about that got you involved? Why do you personally invest your time?
I like to play my instrument. I'm a trombone player, and the band gives me the opportunity not only to play with the larger group itself, but we have three other groups that we can play with: the Bloomington Bones, the Dixieland Band, a German band, and actually another, a fourth, the Swing Time Big Band. So I play in all of those, actually. We play several concerts a year at places like Beltrace and Redbud Hills retirement homes. And it's a way to bring enjoyment to people who live in the area, perhaps who aren't as mobile as others, and they can just simply come down to the area where we're playing and hear a concert of music they might not have heard for a while. The community itself has shown its appreciation for the band over the years in various ways. For example, the B. Moore Awards that are given by the City of Bloomington. We won the Arts and Cultural Award in 2010. We were also selected that same year by to get the what's called the Cassidy Electric Volunteer of the Year Award for downtown Bloomington. I'm sort of typical of the players that we have in the community band, actually. When I was in college, I gave it up. After I got married and had kids, I gave it up for a while. Eventually got around to picking the horn up and seeing if I could still play it, you know. I like to play marches. Frankly, I enjoy playing the swing time music and the Dixieland music more than I do playing in the concert band. But I like a wide variety of music, so it's a nice chance to stretch myself. From the audience's point of view, it gives them an opportunity to hear a lot of music that's been very central to the American experience over the years, dating all the way back to the bands of John Philip Sousa and others that kept this type of music going, you know. We have opportunities for people to play, obviously, the people who are in the band, and not just to play the instrument, but to serve if they want to in actual administrative roles in the band, because this is a self-run organization. We have a board of directors. We have 10 positions on the board that really fulfill roles that are essential to the band's survival, things like fundraising, getting the equipment moved around to various locations, treasurer. Obviously, we have to have a treasurer, a secretary, things of that nature. So it's a self-run organization. It gives people a chance to use their talents in various ways in the organization besides playing. Thanks for listening. I'm Gary Wiggins, and I'm a volunteer with the Bloomington Community Band.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to volunteer your love of music. A new initiative in town, Blooming Memories Through Music, invites those who have a passion for music and know the benefits of music as a tool for soothing the minds of individuals with Alzheimer's, brain disorder, or dementia to join them in their efforts. Monthly advisory board meetings are starting now. Or here's a way to combine your love of Dixieland music and your desire to give back. The Hoosier Hills Dixieland Band plays at civic events and retirement homes. Ask how you can get involved. They rehearse from 7 to 9 p.m. on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month. And the Bloomington Community Band invites you to come play with them. In the spirit of community music, they maintain a no-audition policy. New members are always welcome. Just bring your instrument and they'll make a spot for you. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks. You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to your device. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.